Ireland today feels like it's in the middle of a conversation about immigration and what our identity is across the world. We often think ourselves part of the great diaspora, making communities amongst ourselves in other nations. And we think immigration to our island is something relatively new. But Ireland's history with migration is a lot more than the famine and economic crises. It's previously been a place that welcomed and sometimes rejected communities from all across the globe. It's News Talk Daily. I'm Shane Beattie. We think of immigration to Ireland as something relatively new, but actually that's not really quite true. From Belgian refugees arriving during World War I to Hungarian families housed in Clare in the 1950s to students, workers and doctors coming from across Africa, Asia and Europe, Ireland has been more diverse for much longer than we tend to acknowledge. There were moments of welcome, but also restriction, suspicion and hardship. In some cases, people were prevented from working, from integrating, even from leaving the places they were housed. Fast forward to now, and immigration is again at the centre of public debate, rising tensions, protests and a growing conversation about racism and identity. But if we don't understand the history, it becomes much easier for that conversation to be shaped by fear. To discuss all of this, I'm joined by Kieran Connell, who's history lecturer in Queen's University Belfast. Kieran, you're very welcome to News Talk Daily.
Lovely to be here. Thank you for having me.
It's an interesting conversation because there's a lot about immigration right now. Just tell us, though, some of the things that people may not know about early immigration into Ireland.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two big misconceptions around the subject of migration in Ireland. One is that, you know, most people listening to this will know somebody who's left Ireland at some point in their lives. They may have left Ireland themselves. They may be away from Ireland right now. I feel like immigration is a huge part of Irish identity. You know, it's a feature of literature, of folk songs, music, film, etc. But as you alluded to there in your introduction, there's a big and long history of migration to the island. And the second misconception I would say is that I think most people assume that migration is a recent phenomenon. And in some ways that's true because, you know, if you look at the statistics there between 2012 and 2022, for example, more than 400,000 people migrated to Ireland. There's now about 20% of the population who are born overseas, 23% who come from an ethnicity that's not white Irish. So obviously that's, you know, a relatively new phenomenon in some ways in terms of the numbers. But even if you go back to the 1926 census, which has just been released and made available online, some of your listeners will have been through it, I'm sure. You can see from that census the number of migrants who were attempting to make lives for themselves in Ireland. So, for example, there's a large number of Germans who moved to Limerick in the 1920s to assist with the building of a hydroelectric dam. There was a record of number of Africans living in Ireland at that period, often studying at Ireland's universities. There was a record of a Polish man who set up a hairdresser's in Wexford, having married an Irish woman. And so all these are examples, even from the earliest years of the Free State, of the way in which migrants had moved to Ireland and attempted to make lives themselves in the new post-colonial Irish state.
And even looking there, for a long time, the largest majority in Ireland was actually English. I'm not sure what the situation is now, but we think of so many Irish people who emigrated to England, but people came here from England.
Totally, which has obviously got a very complicated resonance, given Ireland's history, you know. But I think that's the English have consistently been the biggest minority in Ireland. And I think the reasons for migrating to Ireland for among English people, kind of complicated. So for some people, like myself, they will have Irish heritage. And I think one category who I think often get overlooked in the story of migration to Ireland is the story of the experiences of the people who were born in England to Irish parents. So their parents migrated familiar route across the Irish Sea to England, looking to improve their lives, improve their economic status, to take advantage of the welfare state in the 1950s. They had children in England and then at some point decided to move back to Ireland with children who were sort of, you know, teenagers or what have you. And the experiences of those teenagers who had grown up in England, developed English accents like myself, obviously, and then moved back to Ireland is really interesting. So they often found it quite tough to adapt to life in their parents' homeland. You know, there were often a lot of kind of, accused of being plastic paddies or blow-ins, a little bit of a resentment there if those children tried to wear Ireland soccer shirts or whatever it was during the World Cup. And so they had kind of complicated identities whereby they were very much strongly emotionally attached to Ireland, but weren't necessarily treated as Irish by their peers. Another example of English people moving to Ireland would be sort of people having this very romanticized idea of what Ireland was like and how it contrasted with more industrialized nations like England. And so a lot in the 1960s, 70s and 80s, a lot of English people moved to places like Cork, kind of with this idea that it would be a more simple way of life. It would be a chance to escape from a more polarized political climate in Britain, especially with the rise of Margaret Thatcher from 1979 onwards. But they weren't necessarily, I would say, necessarily au fait with Irish history.
Yeah.
And they weren't necessarily aware of the complicated nature of what they were doing in terms of the fact that they were moving to a formerly colonized nation from the country that had previously colonized it. And that, I think, threw up a lot of interesting social relationships with the Irish as time went by.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that there's three people who sit behind me who are all English, but live in Dublin, working here in News Talk as well, but they've very strong Irish links and probably feel very Irish, but they have the English accent. When you moved over, did you find any resistance with your accent?
I live in the north. I live in Belfast. My mum, she grew up in Belfast, but left during the Troubles. Again, a very similar story for a lot of people who decided to leave Ireland from the north as the violence worsened. But for me, it's been a real pleasure to be able to reconnect with that Irish heritage. You know, going further back, my great-grandparents moved from Cork to England in the early 20th century, which seemed, when I was growing up in England, quite distant to me. But having moved back here, it's been a real pleasure to be able to reconnect with that Irish side of my identity. My kids now, born on the island, have Irish passports. I'm very much immersed in Irish culture. They both play Gaelic. It's been a real pleasure in that regard. But to me, one of the sad ironies of talking about this subject in the political context of Ireland today is that those experiences, the experience of diaspora, is written in, I think, to the fabric of Irish culture. As I say, it's written into people's family histories, going back generations, going back all the way to the time of the famine. But we're talking now at a time when anti-immigrant sentiment obviously is on the march in the island, in north and south. Yeah. And you only have to look at the results of, you know, we're talking a few days after the elections in Galway and in Dublin. And in both cases, the popular vote for candidates that were expressing really strong anti-immigrant sentiment was significant. Not significant to win the elections, but nevertheless demonstrated the sense in which some Irish people are now expressing the kind of anti-immigrant sentiment that was a really commonplace feature of Irish people's experiences when they left for places like England, America, or further afield. And that, to me, is a really sad irony of the time that we're living through right now.
Yeah, and looking at the figures from Dublin Central, if you're to add together some of the candidates' final votes, it would seem that next time round for a general election, you could have a candidate who would do very well if they're outspoken on immigration. Gerard Hutch got 11% of the vote. Malachy Stenson got 9%. So add those together, they could do very well in Dublin Central. Can I ask you about Polish people, please? Because my first experience, I think, probably of people moving here was in the noughties, the early noughties, when we saw so many Polish people come here. But actually, Polish people have been coming to Ireland a lot longer than maybe we think.
Absolutely. So there's records of Polish people living in Ireland going back, as I say, all the way to the 1920s, 1930s. And it's a familiar story in some ways. You know, it's in search of a better life. Sometimes it's love and falling in love with an Irish woman, or in some cases, in more rare cases, with an Irishman, and moving over in that regard. I think what's interesting about the Poles is obviously most Polish people are Catholics. And moving to the south of Ireland means there is at least that kind of affinity there between Polish people and Irish people. That didn't stop discrimination from being a feature of Polish migrants' lives. But I think when having the conversation about multicultural Ireland, I think we really need to keep in mind the question of race as well, and the very distinct experiences that, let's say, visible ethnic minorities from Africa or South Asia have, compared to the experiences of white migrants like the English or the Poles. And I think that visibility, that being seen, but certainly in recent times, really kind of separates out the experiences of Irish ethnic minorities who can be, you can't hide the colour of your skin when you're walking down the street or you're walking into a pub or whatever it is. And I think right now, you only have to look at the experiences of somebody like Helen Ogbu, the candidate in Galway recently. Her staff said that they spent 40% of their time basically filtering out racist abuse that she was receiving on social media. So I think Irish people of colour have a really tough time of it at the moment. And I think part of the reason for that is that the moment that we're living in now is very distinct in terms of compared to the experiences maybe that black people had in Ireland in an earlier period, because we're living through a period of radicalisation on social media.
I just wanted to ask you about discrimination. Have people in Ireland always had a problem with so-called foreigners moving here?
I think what's really interesting to me, what I admire about Irish identity, obviously, is there is an affinity for, anti-discrimination movements, anti-colonial movements around the world. Ireland has a long history of standing shoulder to shoulder with, people protesting against apartheid in South Africa or the rights of Palestinians in the Middle East. But I think the problem with that is it can lead to a bit of complacency and the assumption that racism is a problem that maybe affects people in Britain or in the United States, but it couldn't happen here. And the history of immigration to Ireland tells you a different story. So in the 1950s and 1960s, for example, you had larger numbers of Africans moving to Ireland to study at Irish universities. This was the period in the 1960s, really, when you sort of saw for the first time really in Irish history the emergence of a mixed race Irish population. But the stigma that those children faced, and the white women who had entered into relationships often with black men, was really off the charts. And large numbers of those mixed race children were kind of forced into adoption, put into mother and baby homes because of the racialized stigma that was attached to, first of all, to mixed race kids, but second of all, often to experiences to the women who were entering into relationships with black men. And it's also a similar story. So it's interesting, you mentioned in your introduction there about the experiences of the Hungarians who moved to Ireland in the 50s, with Ireland having just become a member of the United Nations. They were keen to play a role in taking on some of the refugees from Hungary, where protesters who were campaigning for democratic rights were being brutally suppressed by the Soviet Union. So Ireland welcomed in about 1,000 Hungarians to County Clare. They were put up in a military barracks there. But the Irish authorities didn't want the Hungarians mixing with the local Irish population. They were basically kept to the barracks in very poor conditions, damp, cold, problems with rodents, etc. And no matter how many times the Hungarians protested just to be able to leave the army barracks, the guards wouldn't let them leave, the authorities wouldn't let them leave, and they even went on hunger strikes, some of them, to try and improve their conditions. And it was to no avail. Right. And that was because there was a real concern in the 1950s that if you had too many migrants mixing with the local population, there could be some kind of problem, social problems thrown up by that. And by the time you get to the late 1950s, 1959, basically all of the Hungarians had left Ireland for Canada. So they're good examples of the way in which, despite what we may think about Irish identity as being this kind of pro-equality identity, siding with post-colonial, anti-colonial movements around the world, Ireland has always had, unfortunately, a problem with racism.
Right. Social problems, what could they have been?
Often it's sex. So when you say, I think that especially when talking about the 60s, obviously the church has got a big role, massive role, outsized role in Irish life. Often when we're talking about social problems, we're talking about sex. And that, there was anxiety about that with the Hungarians, for sure. The idea that they might lead local Irish girls and women astray. But that was even more focused, especially on black men.
Right.
And that, ironically, is to do with colonial era stereotypes about black men being hypersexualized, being potential rapists and all the rest of it. And these are stereotypes around black men that kind of grew up and developed in the colonial era. But what it shows, what's really interesting, in post-colonial Ireland, they were still a feature of people's thinking about race. And you still see that, to be honest, today as well.
I was going to say, that you're talking here 1950s and 60s, but there are shades of all of this today. And even if you think about Ukrainian refugees, officially, publicly, When the war broke out with Russia, the official party line is that Ireland are very welcoming of Ukrainian refugees. We have now seen that gradually chip away. And I mean, officially from a state level, we're taking away some of the supports. But people weren't happy. Maybe some still aren't happy now with taking in Ukrainian refugees.
Yeah, and in some ways, this is a story as old as time, because whenever there's an economic crisis, pretty much in whichever historical period that you're looking at, there's an economic crisis, and especially in the case of Ireland, a housing crisis, then again, it's a story as old as time to demonise newly arrived communities or demonise communities that look different from the majority. And so, you know, I don't think it's a coincidence that we've seen the rise of an ethno-nationalist Irish political movement that's demonising ethnic minorities and immigrant communities at the exact same time that the housing situation in Ireland has become, it's become unsustainable. Because there's votes in it, and as you said in your introduction there as well, in Galway and Dublin, the recent elections there proved that there were votes to be won by demonising immigrant communities. And I think this is part of the bigger story, which is that, this ties in, I think, more generally to Irish history, which is, there's been a lack of planning on the part of the Irish government, I would say, for the implications of Ireland's increasing population. And even though it's less now than it was in the pre-famine era, obviously, if you're not investing in affordable housing for working class people, then you're leaving yourself open to populist politicians to try and mobilise that and weaponise that. Yeah. Happening right now.
That would mean that there may be people in communities that have a very genuine concern about a lack of school places, or you can't get into a local doctor, and maybe they feel their area isn't most suited for refugees, but your populist politicians jump in, move into the area and start whipping up fear.
And what I would worry about that, I feel like Ireland is at a real crucial crossroads now. And I think there's two paths to go down. There's the path which happened in Britain, and it's happened in Britain over the space of 40 years, basically, which is that mainstream politicians, instead of taking on the populist, anti-immigrant and racist sentiment, have essentially tried to ape it and take the wind out of the far-right sails by using the language of the far-right. And the end result of that in the UK is an insurgent anti-immigrant party, Reform UK, being as close as it ever has been in British history to taking the keys to 10 Downing Street. And I think if Irish politics, there are signs that Irish politicians are beginning to think about going down that path. Look at the comments that Bertie Ahern made on the doorstep recently, talking about the ones that he worries about, the Africans, making various anti-Islamic statements in an attempt to win over a conversation on the doorstep. So that's one path, and I think that only leads to one place, which is the far right basically dominating the conversation. And basically, even if they don't get power, they have power by dominating the conversation around migration and influencing government policy that way. The other path is the principled path, which is to take on the far right, to reject xenophobia, reject racism, and actually embrace Irishness as a diverse entity. As the diverse entity that in many ways it has been, as I said before, since the 1920s, and really embrace the rise of what we've seen in more recent years of those kinds of hyphenated Irish identities, Black Irish, Asian Irish, maybe even English Irish, who knows, and sort of weave that into the fabric of what it means to be Irish. And I think it will be really interesting now in the months and years to come to watch which way politicians decide they're going to go.
Yeah. But some people don't like the idea of using the phrase Black Irish because they think it's taking away a bit of the Irishness.
I mean, I think that if you subscribe to that view, you have a very ethno-nationalist view of Ireland, right? The definition of ethno-nationalism is you believe that a country is only for one section of people, white people in the case of the example that you just gave there. And that is ultimately an ethno-nationalist sentiment. That's the same sentiment that some people argue for in Israel, for instance, which is that to be truly Israeli, you have to be Jewish. It's the same sentiment that some people on the extreme far right in Britain mobilise, which is to be British, you have to be white. And it's, first of all, it's not true, as the data, census data from the 1920s and beyond shows. And second of all, I don't think it takes anything away from Irishness. I think to me, anyway, it only strengthens Irishness to demonstrate the way in which Ireland, I think, the majority, it's important to say that the majority of people in Ireland, I still do believe, celebrate increasing diversity of the island, take it as a compliment that people are wanting to move to take to kind of form and shape the new island. And that, again, I think is an important part of Irish history. People are attracted, I think, often to Ireland, especially people that come from formerly colonised nations themselves. are attracted to Ireland because of the way in which it won its independence much earlier than a lot of other countries. And second of all, I think it's developed a really kind of like strong, positive, post-colonial, inclusive Irish identity. And it would be a real shame, I think, politically, if at the moment the minority on the extreme far right are allowed to sort of like chip away at that version of Irish identity and turn it into something much more defensive and narrow.
I was reading some of your comments on this about Ireland's long multicultural history. What can we learn from it to make sure we don't repeat the same mistakes and that we make Ireland a more welcoming place for people coming here?
Yeah, so one of the things we're trying to do, the project that I'm involved in, is to actually talk to people from migrant backgrounds. So we're really, really interested in interviewing people, migrants themselves, or people whose parents came to Ireland, or even people whose grandparents came to Ireland, and actually learning about their experiences. So I think if anyone listening, that applies to anyone, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at multicultural.ireland@qub.ac.uk. The reason why we want to do that is that I kind of feel like we pay a huge amount of respect to the millions of Irish people who at some point over the last 150 years left Ireland in search for a better life. That has become a huge part of Irish identity. But I think in the current climate, it's important to treat the people who moved to Ireland with the same level of respect and understand their own experiences, both good and bad, and in order to be able to learn from maybe some of the mistakes that were made in the past to shape a better future. So that's really what we're trying to do with this project, is foreground the experiences of people who moved to Ireland and people whose parents and grandparents moved to Ireland as well.
Just finally to ask you, you're in Belfast, and we know that in the past it's been very difficult for Catholics and Protestants to live together. How do people moving to Belfast and to Northern Ireland fit into that? Is there a certain irony here that maybe the nationalist and loyalist side come together in their resistance, perhaps, of people moving to Northern Ireland?
I mean, I feel like, again, as a historian, I feel we're living through unprecedented times. And the moment when I really kind of, was brought home to me was when 2 years ago, in the summer of 2024, you had the sight of Irish nationalists up from Dublin marching with the tricolour side by side with Ulster loyalists marching with the Union Jack, united in opposition to immigration. And these are people up from the south of Ireland, you know, marching alongside people who in previous generations would have been murdering Catholics on the streets of Belfast. And it's a really, I think it's tragic, it's sad, but it is also unprecedented. And in terms of, but I think Ireland in the north is also changing in similar ways to Ireland in the south. So you're also seeing rising levels of migration to Northern Ireland. And that's partly ironically because of the very unique place of Northern Ireland within the context of the UK and the European Union, sharing a border with the European Union on this island. Historically, though, again, that's a story that's gone back to, you know, the early 20th century, and it leads to some really kind of like amusing stories. So, for example, one of the stories you often hear from people who've moved to Northern Ireland from places like India or elsewhere is that people ask them, OK, what religion are you? And they say, you know, Hindu or Jewish. And then they say, well, OK, well, are you a Catholic Hindu or are you a Protestant Hindu? And I think that just shows the way in which the divided culture of this part of the island is still used to inform the experiences of migrants who have moved and continue to move to this part of Ireland.
It's incredible. Are you one of the Catholic Hindus? It's incredible. You say Ireland has a long multicultural history. It's time to tell that story. I think you've told it very well, Kieran. Thank you very much for joining us on News Talk Daily. Kieran Connell, who's history lecturer in Queen's University Belfast. I know a lot of people have a lot of views on immigration. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can email us newstalkdaily@newstalk.com. That's all from me, Shane Beattie. Until next time, goodbye.